On Earth in 1967 in the High Sierras. It is dusk, and the blood-red sky of the setting sun reveals a crescent moon.
The temperature right now in downtown Barstow is 75 degrees.
A man with long, unkempt blonde hair and a drooping moustache, a tattoo of a rose on his forearm, retunes the radio. Bored and sitting alone at his campfire, he uses two sticks to beat out the rhythm of the song on his cooking pots. He frowns at the interference on the radio, picking it up, shaking it, trying to reset the tuning. Suddenly the ground begins to move beneath his feet, and there is a great rushing of wind. He stands, looking puzzled, as brilliant white light floods the clearing in which he is camping. He is nearly thrown off his feet by a massive impact nearby. He steps cautiously forward to see what has caused the commotion.
Far out.
British Sky Broadcasting presents Star Trek Voyager, based on Star Trek, created by Gene Roddenberry. This episode is entitled Future's End, Part 1, voiced by Roland Bean. Gas explodes outwards in a huge arc from an enormous sun. Nuclear reactions in the star's core send great gouts of flame thousands of miles into space. The Federation starship Voyager flies through a giant arc of fire on its continuing journey to find home. Its captain is Catherine Janeway. The starship Voyager pushes through clouds of dust and gas. Its flat, oval bow, raised above and forward of the cylindrical body, to which the engine arms are fixed, forges a path through the unknown darkness of space. Billions of stars shine throughout the universe, illuminating huge gas clouds and multicolored planets. A blue-green planet is framed in a golden glow, surrounded by the jagged illuminations of gas and space debris. Voyager flies past great rocks covered in ice and on into the farthest reaches of infinite space. A blue-gray planet, streaked with clouds, turns in space. Its gravitational pull holds fragments of rock, the debris of dead planets and comets, in a thin band encircling the planet like a giant ring. As Voyager passes beyond the ringed planet and on towards others, an unknown sun, eclipsed by a satellite moon, is revealed as the moon moves on its eternal orbit. The darkness itself is eclipsed by the star's intense brightness. Millions of miles ahead of Voyager, a gigantic gaseous blue and red nebula proves the existence of many more galaxies. The engines power up, glowing bright blue either side of the starship, and it lunges forward, accelerating into the nebula and disappearing. Aboard Voyager, Captain Janeway is practicing her tennis serves. She is clearly a novice.
Come in. Oh, sorry, Tuvok. I was just practicing my serve.
Your serve?
Tennis. After 19 years, I've decided to take it up again. I'm a little rusty. I played in a novice tournament on the holodeck and lost my first match in straight sets.
Perhaps if you maintained eye contact with the ball at the apex of its trajectory, your serve would be more effective.
You play tennis?
Simple physics, Captain.
Not as simple as when I played on the high school tennis team. What can I do for you, Tuvok?
I've completed my monthly security evaluation. All systems and crew
Red alert. Captain Janeway to the bridge.
Tuvok and Janeway react immediately.
Report.
Some sort of spatial rift. It opened right in front of us.
Analysis.
It's a distortion in the space-time continuum, but it's got a graviton matrix. It's being artificially generated.
By whom?
Sensors can't get inside. The distortion field's fluctuating. Something's coming out.
It appears to be a small ship, approximately 6 meters in length.
Magnify.
Sensors are reading one occupant, human. He is holding position at the perimeter of the rift.
There's a subspace signature emanating from the ship.
Harry looks puzzled.
Captain? It's Federation.
Hail them.
No response. They appear to be charging weapons.
Shields up. Hail them again.
Approaching Voyager, a small craft suddenly unleashes a massive burst of destructive energy.
Shields are down.
Get us out of here.
Helm control is offline.
He's firing some kind of subatomic disruptor.
Return fire.
Full phasers. No effect.
Voyager's molecular structure is coming apart.
Tuvok, divert all available power to the deflector. Send out a high-energy polaron pulse. It might help to disrupt his weapon.
Emitting deflector pulse. Now.
Voyager stabilizes.
It's working.
We are being hailed.
Hans Greed.
Starship Voyager, I'm Captain Braxton of the Federation Timeship Aeon. I've come from 29th century Earth, 500 years into your future. Please disengage your deflector pulse.
Why are you firing at us?
Your vessel is responsible for a disaster in my century. A temporal explosion that will destroy all of Earth's solar system. I've come back in time to prevent that occurrence. My mission is your destruction. You must not resist.
I'm going to need some more information before I allow
you to... Debris from your secondary hull was found in the explosion.
Captain, I simply...
No time!
Braxton unleashes another massive blast.
He's remodulating the subatomic disruptor. Our deflector is losing power. It won't hold much longer.
Captain, if he's telling the truth...
I won't sacrifice the ship and crew based on a 10-second conversation. I need proof.
Doesn't look like we're going to get it.
Adjust our deflector to match the frequency of his weapon. Try to overload his emitter.
It seems to be working. His weapon is offline and his ship has been damaged. The rift is destabilizing, and he's being pulled back inside.
Reestablish helm control.
I'm trying, Captain, but we seem to be caught in some kind of graviton distortion. We're being pulled in, too.
Braxton's vessel and Voyager are sucked helplessly through the pulsating tear in the fabric of space. Voyager is buffeted by enormous forces, and brilliant energy floods the bridge. Janeway awakens to find herself lying on the deck.
Status.
Primary systems are coming back online. The weapons grid and power array took heavy damage.
The temporal rift is closed. Where are we?
Tom Paris frowns, and his eyes widen in disbelief as the familiar shape of the Earth appears on the main screen.
Home. We just cut across half the galaxy.
The rift must have originated here. Hail, Starfleet Command.
No response on standard frequencies. Curious. I am picking up a multitude of narrowband EM signals.
Let's hear. The question isn't where we are. It's when we are. Mr. Kim.
According to astrometric readings, the year is 1996. The late 20th century.
Captain, they had surveillance satellites during this time.
Maintain a high orbit and modulate the shields to scatter their radar. We don't want to alarm the natives.
What about the time ship? Is it here too? There's no sign of the vessel in orbit. Scanning the planet's surface. I am picking up low-frequency subspace readings emanating from the northern hemisphere.
Subspace technology shouldn't exist for another 100 years or so.
Could be our friend from the 29th century. Localize it.
North American continent, Pacific coast, the city of Los Angeles.
Janeway's look becomes determined.
We've got to go down there. If it is Captain Braxton, he's the key to all this. And at the moment, his ship is the only way we have of getting back to our own century. Chakotay, Tuvok, Paris, you're with me. Mr. Kim, you have the bridge.
Yes, ma'am.
As I recall, Tom, you're something of an aficionado on 20th century America.
That's right.
What will we need to pass as locals in this era?
Simple. Nice clothes, fast car, and lots of money.
On a street in 20th century Los Angeles, a young man on inline skates with a loud stereo hanging round his neck knocks over some brightly coloured plastic toys which a street vendor has laid out on the pavement. A punk with brightly coloured hair hangs out on a corner, and a young woman is taking her two enormous Rottweilers for a walk. There are motorbikes, girls in high heels and skimpy bikinis, and a stilt walker advertises Uncle Sam's psychic readings.
We could have worn our Starfleet uniforms. I doubt if anyone would have noticed.
Smiling, they move on.
The subspace readings are coming from within a 100-meter radius of our position, but I can't pinpoint the source.
I find it hard to believe a ship from the 29th century could have landed on this beach without being noticed.
We have no idea what kind of technology they might have in the future. Maybe it's cloaked. Let's spread out. Tuvok, Paris, go check the shoreline. Chakotay and I will search the boardwalk.
Hi, Captain.
Well, Catherine, you got us home.
Right place, wrong time. But it is good to be back, nevertheless.
Maybe I should look up a few ancestors. As I recall, one of them was a school teacher in Arizona.
I don't know what my relatives were doing this far back in history.
Sorry.
For all I know, she could be my great-great-great-great-grandmother.
She does have your legs.
Have you ever been to Southern California, Chakotay?
No.
After the Hermosa quake in 2047, this entire region sank under 200 meters of water. It became one of the world's largest coral reefs, home to thousands of different marine species.
two punks walk past.
Some interesting species in this century.
Janeway looks as though she can't quite believe what she's just seen. Under the boardwalk, Paris and Tuvok continue the search for the 29th century vessel.
Subspace readings are weaker here. Let's head up to the boardwalk.
The sun feels great.
Thermal and ultraviolet radiation are at hazardous levels.
Oh, lighten up, Tuvok. This was a great time and place, and you're getting to see it firsthand. Come on, take off your shirt.
And risk dermal dysplasia. No, thank you.
Oh, Vulcans. Deep down, you're all a bunch of hypochondriacs.
Okay, I got it. The readings are coming from over there. 10 meters. There.
They watch puzzled as an old tramp rummages in a dumpster.
So much for the time ship.
There's no doubt about it. The subspace readings are coming from him.
Still puzzled, they set off to follow the tramp. In a small room in the high stone-walled and domed structure of the Los Angeles Observatory, the room is decorated with garish posters from old horror movies, such as Orgy of the Walking Dead, Vampire Vixens, and also cuttings from newspapers showing astronauts on the moon and an article entitled Life on Mars. The room is also equipped with the flashing screens of highly sophisticated computer equipment. Watching the screens, a young woman sits with her sandaled feet up on the desk. There is an empty carton of Chinese food at her computer keyboard, and she is sipping a soft drink from a paper cup through a straw. Lines begin to trace across the computer screen. She is watching. She frowns.
No way.
She works quickly on her keyboard to run more programs and check what she has just seen. Her jaw drops open as she sees something unexpected is definitely orbiting the Earth.
Way.
Elsewhere, a blonde man places a computer chip on a table.
It's crap. The component density is too low, the voltage variance is out of spec, and I don't even like the color.
But, Mr. Starling,
we've got less than 6 months before we introduce the HyperPro PC. And with a chip like this driving it, we'll have to change the name to Edsel. I gave your company this contract because you're the best in the business. Next to us, of course. Go home, Jim. Lose some sleep over this. I want a full report middle of next week. What am I doing, Dave?
You are in a meeting, sir.
And?
And I know I'm not supposed to interrupt, but there's a woman calling on line 3 from Griffith Observatory, Rain Robinson. She says it's urgent.
Put her through. Henry Starling.
Hi, I don't know if you remember me. I'm one of the astronomers at the SETI lab you're funding. We met at the Griffith Restoration Party.
Yes, what is it?
Okay, well, it was my understanding you wanted to be notified immediately if I ever picked up a gamma emission that matched the frequency profile you gave me. Well, I did. So I am.
Are you certain?
Positive. I tracked the emission, and guess what? The source is in orbit. It is right above us.
When did it show up?
According to the raw data, about 90 minutes ago. I'm not picking up anything from the standard search parameters. Wow. That means no one else knows there's something up there. We've got to tell somebody about this. We've got to call NASA.
Rain, that's a little premature, don't you think? This could be a close encounter, but then again, could be a flock of geese.
Geese don't park themselves 20,000 kilometers above North America. Let's send a message up there, see if there's a response.
No. We don't know what we found. And until we do, I'm not going to risk embarrassing myself or your observatory. Track the emission, collect more data, and keep me informed. In the meantime, I'm going to put a bottle of champagne on ice. Do you think E.T. likes Chateau Cœur?
Well, if he doesn't, I've got a six-pack in the fridge.
Good work, Rain. Stay in touch.
His face now set and serious, Starling removes his jacket and crosses to a table with a water jug and glass. He stretches out his hand to pour the water. There is a tattoo of a rose on his forearm. Meanwhile, in her office, Rain Robinson is monitoring the course of the orbiting object.
What the hell?
Working quickly, she types and transmits a greeting message to the orbiting object.
Anyone up there?
Silhouetted against the bright surface of the planet, the orbiting object is, of course, Voyager.
That trip through the rift is still affecting our primary systems. Weapons are offline, we blew 3 EPS conduits, and our main transporter buffer just crashed.
We've got an away team down there.
I know. We've still got emergency transporters, but they're short range.
How close to the surface would we have to get to beam them up?
Pretty close. I'd say less than 10 kilometers.
If we do that, somebody's going to see us.
Sir, I'm picking up an EM signal from the planet's surface. It's directed at our coordinates.
On screen.
Greetings from the people of Earth.
Saludos de los habitantes de la Tierra.
Привет от народа мира.
Shall I respond, sir?
Absolutely not.
Harry purses his lips in frustration. Meanwhile, on the surface, Chakotay and the captain are still following the old tramp. He's pushing a shopping trolley full of junk. He attaches a sign saying the end is coming to a nearby lamppost.
He appears to live on the street. That pushcart seems to contain all his belongings.
From what we can tell, he spends most of his time putting up literature about the end of the world.
Janeway here.
Captain, we've got a problem. We received a signal from the surface. It looks like a standard greeting designed for extraterrestrials.
We've been detected.
It looks that way. We tracked the signal to an observatory about 20 kilometers from your location.
Transport Paris and Tuvok to those coordinates.
I can't do that right now, not without going into a lower orbit. The main pattern buffer is offline. Belana says it could take a couple of days to repair.
In that case, transmit those coordinates to Mr. Tuvok's tricorder. He and Tom will have to get there using more conventional means.
Aye, Captain. Kim out.
Nobody walks in Los Angeles, and they don't have much of a public transportation system. We're gonna need some wheels.
Do what you have to do. Find out who sent that message and get more information. Have we been detected? How many people know about us? We cannot risk contaminating the timeline.
Aye, Captain. See you later.
Tuvok and Paris head off to find transport to the observatory as Chakotay and Janeway continue their pursuit of the old tramp following him across the park. In an alleyway amongst the graffiti, the words, "The End of the Future," have been sprayed in bright paint. A makeshift shelter appears to have been made out of an old broken-down car and a parachute. The old tramp arrives at a brisk trot, pushing his shopping trolley. Chakotay and Janeway follow at a discreet distance. The tramp stops, hearing their footsteps.
Who the hell are you?
This is my stuff.
It's all right. We don't want your stuff. We just want to ask you a few questions.
No. No more questions, no. No more surveys! Damn social workers coming around all the time! No, I don't need your advice. I don't need your...
Voyager. When you show up, oh, this is all your fault. This is all you're doing.
Captain Braxton.
I told you to turn off your deflector pulse, but you wouldn't listen to me. Voyager. Fools!
The last time we saw you...
I was a younger man, confident in my mission. But you wouldn't listen to me. No, you were too concerned with yourselves.
You were trying to destroy us.
I was trying to save billions of lives, to stop a chain of reaction that started with Voyager. It's too late now. Oh, all things are set in motion. The temporal explosion will occur. The end is coming. The future's end.
Captain, how long have you been here in the 20th century?
Oh, too long. 30 years too long.
And yet we just arrived. Why?
Pure chance. And when you knock my navigation system off course, there's no telling where we would have ended up. Who's been here? Who took my pencils? Oh, always something missing. People always wanting to steal things. Oh, greedy people. Post-industrial barbarians.
Captain, we want to help you, but you've got to give us more information. You said that Voyager causes the explosion.
Yes. No. Yes.
That's a paradox, my dear. A leads to B, leads to C, leads to A.
Janeway flashes Chakotay a baffled look.
Juvenile minds. Oh, how can I make you understand, huh? A! There's an explosion in the 29th century. Debris from Voyager's hull is found in evidence. I go back in time to destroy you. B! You try to stop me. Disabling my weapon, which causes me to crash land back here in the 20th century. C. someone in this century steals my time ship and launches it. They go into the future, and once there, they make one critical mistake, which causes a temporal explosion that takes us all the way back. Tay, there's an explosion in the 29th century. The cycle of causality is complete.
How do you know all this? What evidence do you have that it will be your time ship that causes the disaster?
I spent 30 years answering that very question.
Braxton rummages through some boxes next to an old abandoned car door and pulls out a tattered piece of paper.
Oh, yes. When the explosion first happened, my sensors recorded a whole variety of chronometric data. The pulses were highly chaotic. First, I thought it was a warp core implosion. But then I found debris from Voyager. And my theory seemed to be confirmed. It was you. But then someone here stole my time ship. Then started to dawn on me. If someone were to fly my time ship into the future without recalibrating the temporal matrix, then that could cause the kind of explosion that I witnessed in the 29th century.
So it really wasn't Voyager after all?
No. No, I reconstructed all the chronometric data as best I could remember it, and it proved that I was right. My ship causes the catastrophe.
Which raises the question, who has your time ship?
Starling. Henry Starling, CEO, Chronoworks Industries, philanthropist, entrepreneur, outstanding citizen. Before I crashed in the year 1967, I made an emergency beam out, but he found my ship before I did in some remote mountain range. I've been following this corrupt little man ever since, tracking his movements. But he's become too powerful. I can't get close to him. Of course, you can't accomplish anything in this wretched century. Nobody here listens. Do you know that once they put me in a mental institution and filled me with primitive pharmaceuticals?
Maybe we can help you find Starling and your ship and get us back to where we belong.
Oh, I wouldn't do that if I were you.
Why not?
Haven't you been listening? A leads to B.
Leads to C, yes, we heard you. Why shouldn't we try to stop Starling?
Because somehow you're involved in the disaster. That's why I found debris from Voyager's holiday at the explosion. You will be destroyed as well.
Now that we know what's going to happen, maybe we can figure out.
Shocked to see a police cruiser, Janeway and Chakotay try to look inconspicuous.
Hey, Captain. How you doing? I understand you've been putting these signs up around the city again.
No. Not me. I would never do that.
Why don't you walk over here and we can talk about it?
You stay right where you are, you quasi-Cardassian totalitarian!
Hey, look, no need to get upset about this. We just want to talk to you about the signs. Now, there have been a few people complaining.
Captain, tell them I'm not crazy. Tell them I'm from the future. They came from the future, too, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, they came in on a starship.
All right.
Janeway shrugs helplessly.
Traitors!
Okay, stand by.
This is 247 Baker in pursuit of a 5150 suspect.
We'll have to worry about him later. Right now, we've got to find Starling.
The headquarters of Chronoworks.
We're not quite at the little green men stage yet, but believe me, you'll be the first to know. What I think we have here is an over-enthusiastic young lady. I'm afraid she's exaggerating. We don't have anything, not yet. Thank you, Professor. You know what that little brat did? She emailed a friend of hers at JPL, who called his professor at Caltech. She's a security risk. Go to Griffith, get the data, get rid of her.
Yes, sir.
Dunbar, if it's true, if they're here, it's only a matter of time before they find me. There's no telling what capabilities they'll have. You may have to use the weapon.
I understand.
As Starling concentrates on his pinball game, in the Hollywood Hills, across from the famous Hollywood sign on the hillside, a large dark pickup truck arrives at the observatory, containing Paris and Tuvok.
Perhaps we should find a more secluded parking place. This is, after all, a stolen vehicle.
Nobody's around, Tuvok. You're fine.
A taxi cab would have been less worrisome and more ethical.
We haven't stolen anything. We borrowed a car, and we'll return it to the dealership as soon as we're done.
I was referring to the ethics of time travel.
Somehow, I doubt that taking a test drive is going to alter the course of the universe.
Entering the building, they open a door marked Do Not Enter, Employees Only. It is Rain Robinson's office. They proceed cautiously, marveling at the 20th century technology. On Rain's desk, pink blobs move slowly in a lava lamp, and Tom Parrish smiles as he picks up a glass paperweight in the shape of a dinosaur. He shakes the ornament, making a snowstorm appear to start in the dinosaur's glass belly.
Over here. These are radio wave readouts. It looks like radio telescope transmission. It's pretty basic.
Lieutenant, you are being careless.
Oh, too far.
I will not lighten up on this matter. Thus far, I have tolerated your impulsive methods. At times, they do work to our advantage. But discretion is also a virtue. We must leave things exactly as they were.
Looking exasperated, Parrish stands and points his tricorder at Rain's computer monitor.
They found us, all right. The orbital schematic matches Voyager's position.
According to this data, they are tracking the warp emissions from our engines.
Nobody in this century even knows what warp emissions are.
Nevertheless, it appears they've configured their telescope to scan for them.
Excuse me. Do not enter. Employees only. The sign on the door.
I'm sorry. I think we're a little lost. We were on the museum tour and we took a wrong turn at the Saturn exhibit.
Perhaps you could tell us how to get back to the lobby.
Go back down the hall, take a left at Mars, right at Halley's Comet, and then just keep going straight ahead past the soda machine.
Right? Tuvok and Parrish stand awkwardly for a moment.
This lab is, pretty groovy.
Groovy?
What do you do here?
We watch the skies.
For what?
Signs of extraterrestrial life. Nice meeting you.
My name is Tom Parrish, by the way.
Rain Robinson.
Your curves don't look so great.
Excuse me?
This is a Fourier spectral analysis.
That's exactly what it is.
You know, you might get better resolution if you adjust your amplitude parameters.
You're probably right.
Or you might try using a theta band filter.
You know a lot for someone who can't find his way past Saturn.
I majored in astrophysics.
Where?
Starfleet Academy.
Never heard of it.
East Coast School. Orgy of the Walking Dead? That's a classic. Did you see the sequel? Bride of the Corpse.
Let me guess, you minored in B-movies.
Something like that.
Pardon me, Tom. We should be going. Our friends are waiting for us.
Yeah, right. Gotta go.
Hey! I do the planetarium show Tuesday nights. So, you guys should come by, check it out. Bring your friends. The best stars in Hollywood are right above us.
Yeah, great. But I think we're busy on Tuesday. Thanks anyway.
Rain looks disappointed as Tom and Tuvok leave the office.
No problem.
Rain returns to her computer, slumps down in her chair, and begins to make the adjustments Parrish suggested.
Whoa.
Rain's computer monitor begins to show static. A skull and crossbones appear with the message Fatal System Error.
I downloaded all of her data into the tricorder and disrupted her data storage device.
Good. I hope she doesn't get in any trouble.
It will simply look like a computer malfunction.
It's a shame, though. She was about to make the biggest discovery in human history. Could have changed her career.
And ended ours. I am curious, Lieutenant. What does it mean, groovy?
Hey! Hey, you guys!
Red alert!
Hey! Hey! Just wait a minute! What the hell did you do to my computer? It is screwed up! The hard drive is wiped!
Look, I don't have time to explain.
Who are you people, and what is that thing in your pants?
I beg your pardon.
That little gadget you put in your pocket, what is it, a demagnetizer?
Get down!
Tuvok returns fire as the pickup truck is vaporized by a phaser blast from Starling's henchmen.
What the hell?
Do you have a car?
Yeah, over there.
We will need to use it.
Oh.
As they run towards the aging VW camper van, Tuvok fires again. Starling's henchman dives for cover behind a stone statue. He fires back at Tuvok but misses. Tuvok shoots again, sending the phaser spinning out of the man's hand, coming to rest several feet away. Pausing only to retrieve the bandana he has been using to cover his head and pointed ears, Tuvok runs for the van and is hauled aboard. The henchman retrieves the phaser, but the van is gone.
Operations officer's log supplemental. We've been on full sensor alert looking for signs that anyone else has detected Voyager. As a precaution, I've also asked Neelix and Cass to monitor all media broadcasts.
We've set up a computer algorithm to search for keywords and phrases, anything that might indicate Voyager.
Anything so far?
Not yet, although we have come across some very intriguing televised broadcasts. Take a look at this. It's a form of entertainment called a soap opera. The exploration of human relationships is fascinating.
I can't imagine just watching the story and not being a part of it.
That's because you've been spoiled by the holodeck. There's something to be said for non-interactive stories like this being swept away in the narrative.
Oh, I can't wait to see if Blaine's twin brother is the father of Jessica's baby.
Good work. Keep me informed and don't get too swept away.
Aisha.
Nobody'll know the difference.
I'll know, Sharon. He's my brother. How can I face him knowing that our son is his son?
All you need to know, Jack, is that I love you.
As Neelix and Kez watch entranced, a red warning light begins to flash on the wall of Starling's office in ChronoWorks headquarters. The handle of the door turns. As the door opens, a tricorder is revealed. It is Chakotay's, and Janeway is with him. He points the instrument at the flashing intruder alarm and cancels it.
So far, so good. We haven't set off any alarms.
Advancing cautiously into the room, they see some of the items decorating the office. There is a silver-framed photograph of Starling with President Nixon, a medal set in a glass frame, a golden Hawaiian statue, a photograph of Starling on the summit of Everest, and a framed cover of a copy of Technology Future magazine with Starling's face on it.
Our Mr. Starling has built himself quite a corporate empire. Looks like he's got wealth, celebrity, and an ego to match.
Janeway stops as she notices Starling's computer. She crosses to it, and sitting on the chair, she begins typing awkwardly, trying to guess the password.
I see you never learned to type.
Turn of the millennium technology wasn't a required course at the Academy. This is like stone knives and bearskins.
Well, this isn't. I'm detecting a force field. I can't scan beyond this wall. I don't see an access port or a control panel.
Maybe we can find something in his computer.
Janeway activates her tricorder.
He's got a massive database here, but it's protected by an encryption sequence. I'm going to try interfacing my tricorder.
The password is immediately bypassed, and icons appear on the screen.
Looks like a series of pictographs. They must have used symbols to represent the different functions of the computer.
Let's see what Henry's been up to all these years.
Paris, Tuvok, and Rain drive through the bright lights and bustle of Sunset Strip.
The transstators were disrupted by that energy weapon. Our communicators are useless.
That means we can't call the... our friends. What do we do now?
You're gonna take a right at the next light and a left at the taco stand, because you're taking me home. And you're not keeping the van.
I am afraid that is not possible, Miss Robinson. Your life may be in danger.
I'm gonna pop this hatch and I'm gonna start screaming until you tell me what's going on. Who are you? What is that thing in orbit? Why did that guy try to kill us?
I told you, we're secret agents.
I'm opening the hatch.
Look, we saved your life. Isn't it obvious we're on your side?
I'm standing up. I'm taking a deep breath.
Rain, you're not gonna scream. No, I know you're frightened, and you've seen some pretty strange things, but you have to trust me. We're not gonna hurt you, and I will explain everything. It's either that or take your chances with the guy who tried to vaporize you!
Suddenly rolling her eyes, Rain drops back inside the van.
The UFO, what is it?
It's a Soviet spy satellite. Part of a massive KGB operation. We're trying to stop it.
Soviet? The USSR broke up 5 years ago. The KGB doesn't even exist anymore.
That's what they'd like you to think.
Perhaps we've told her enough for now.
What about you, Agent Tuvok? What's up with those ears? Thought I didn't notice? I did. What about your weapons? What are they, lasers?
I'm sorry, that information is classified. And as for my ears, they are a family trait.
He's very sensitive about them.
Ugh, whatever.
We must find a way to contact our friends.
Incredible. Starling's computer designs were inspired by technology from the time ship. We introduced the very first isograded circuit in 1969, 2 years after Braxton's ship crash landed.
And every few years, there's been an equally revolutionary advance in computers, all from Chronoworks Industries, all based on Starling's crude understanding of 29th century technology.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking, Chakotay?
I wish I weren't.
The computer age of the late 20th century.
Shouldn't have happened.
But it did, and it's part of our history. All because of that time ship. Look at this. Gantry, power conduits, telemetry consoles. This looks like a design for a launching bay.
Braxton was right. The ship's going to be launched.
We've got to send these schematics to Voyager for analysis. Janeway to Voyager.
Kim here, Captain.
We're in Starling's office. I want you to establish a comm link with my tricorder and try to upload his computer database.
Aye, Captain. We'll need a few minutes to reconfigure to their binary system.
Acknowledged. Let's see if we can find out where the location of that launch pad is.
You're really getting the hang of this.
I'm a quick study.
You know, Captain, in a way, Braxton was right. If we hadn't fought him when he tried to destroy Voyager, he wouldn't have been pulled back in time, his ship wouldn't have crash-landed on Earth, and none of this would have happened.
Time travel. Since my first day on the job as a Starfleet captain, I swore I'd never let myself get caught in one of these godforsaken paradoxes. The future is the past is the future. It all gives me a headache.
Hold on. This looks promising. Try Timeship Security Portal.
Maybe it's linked to some sort of surveillance system. An image of the launch bay would give us a clue to its location.
Behind them, the wall which Chakotay could not scan through suddenly lights up and becomes transparent. They walk across, and looking in, see a large bay containing the time ship. Suddenly, the lights in the office snap on, and Starling enters.
I see you've made yourself at home. Welcome to the 20th century. I know who you are. You're from the future. I knew you'd come back one day. I detected your vessel in orbit, and Mr. Dunbar here had a run-in with your friends. You're here to take the timeship.
Mr. Starling, you're about to cause a terrible disaster that will affect the 29th century. An explosion that will cost billions of lives. We're here to stop you from doing that.
What are you talking about?
If you launch that ship and travel to the future, it will destroy Earth's solar system.
How do you know this?
Well, let's just say we talked to the ship's previous owner. He told us that if its temporal matrix isn't precisely calibrated, you'll trigger a temporal explosion. That ship shouldn't be here. It belongs to another century. We have to take it back.
What's that?
It's a communication device. Someone's trying to contact me.
Answer it.
Janeway here.
Captain, we've established the comm link, ready to upload on your signal.
Do it.
My database. Stop, or I'll kill your captain.
Who is this?
You've got 5 seconds.
Break the link.
Done.
What's our transporter status?
The main pattern buffers are still offline. We can try an emergency transport from a lower orbit.
That's exactly what the captain ordered us not to do. We'd be risking detection.
Harry, we can't worry about that. Now their lives are in danger.
And if somebody sees a starship flying through the clouds?
The captain put you in charge. It is your decision.
Harry takes a moment to think.
Helm, get a fix on Chakotay and the captain.
Aye, sir.
B'Elanna, stand by emergency transporters. Get ready to beam them directly to the bridge. Take us down.
You've taken over 3,000 gigabytes of information, including my launch plan. But that's not going to be a problem, Captain. I'll make a few changes to my travel itinerary. You're not going to stop me.
If you don't give us that ship, we'll take it by force.
In case you haven't noticed, I'm holding the gun.
Not for long. I've got a starship in orbit that could vaporize this entire building in the blink of an eye.
And you along with it.
If necessary.
Captain,
You've got some cojones.
Kill them!
Damn.
Chakotay and the captain dematerialize as Voyager swoops over the city of Los Angeles.
Hell, maintain present altitude. Keep us within transporter range. Chakotay, see if you could disable the force field around that time ship. B'Elanna, prepare to lock onto the time ship and beam it to Cargo Bay 2. Hanson Kim, you have an impeccable sense of timing. Not bad for your first day in the big chair.
Harry swells with pride.
The force field's down. Sir, the time ship.
They're trying to teleport the ship.
The matter stream is remodulating. He's disrupting transport.
Yes.
Captain, I don't understand how, but he's using our transporter beam as a downlink. He's accessing our main computer.
Every time I try to disable his downlink, he comes up with a new command override.
Starling is using 29th century technology against us. We may not be able to keep up with him.
Inertial dampers are offline. He's gotten into our propulsion systems.
Disengage transporters.
Destabilizing matter stream. Transporters offline.
We've terminated the downlink, Captain, but he got at least 20% of our main computer data files.
Get us back into orbit, and I want a full damage report.
Captain Janeway. Henry Starling here.
This is Janeway.
USS Voyager, Intrepid class. Much bigger than I expected, and much less advanced. Says here your ship was launched in the year 2371. You're from the 24th century? And here all this time, I thought you were from the 29th. Looks like I have the home field advantage. Ooh, what's this? Oh, now this is interesting.
Damage reports are coming in. Some minor power fluctuations in the impulse drive and a few burned out circuits in the main computer core. Nothing we can't handle.
Sick Beta Bridge. Captain, I can't find the doctor.
Is his program offline?
No, his program is gone.
Where am I?
Who are you?
Welcome.
Next on News at 10.
Captain, this is Neelix. There's something on the television I think you should see.
It's a current events program.
I asked Neelix to monitor Earth broadcasts. I'm transferring it to the main viewer.
Incredible footage was caught just an hour ago by a man using his camcorder to tape a backyard barbecue. The massive, unidentifiable object does not appear to be a meteorite, weather balloon, or satellite, and one aviation expert we've spoken to has stated that it's definitely not any kind of U.S. aircraft currently in use. We're awaiting investigation by local authorities, and we'll keep you updated as news develops on this incredible story.
To be continued.